And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Today we're going to talk about the election in Venezuela and about Syria, the developments there, and particularly the tendency of the media to try to manipulate the information and stories coming from Syria to benefit the foreign policy of, let's say, NATO, but Canada, the U.S., certainly the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star have had a storyline. We're going to ask Rick Sterling to talk about that. That'll be in the latter part of the show. If you do not know, there's been an election in Venezuela, and the party in leadership have been reelected, Mr. Maduro, and Eve Engler has been writing about this matter. He wrote an article for Venezuela Analysis. I refer you to that. And he's very concerned about the tendency of Canada to involve itself in attempts to negate the result of that election and to actually actively work against the government, the democratic government of President Maduro. And it's Canada's involvement and bad role has been deepening. And if you read Amy Engler's article, which you will find at Venezuela Analysis, you'll get the necessary details, and we should be talking to him shortly. I will say we want to also express our concern, our solidarity with the Palestinian people, those who demonstrated in the March of Return in Gaza. We often hear that Israel has a right to defend themselves. The Palestinians have a right to have a March of Return. It was a nonviolent march. And there were, the world knows now, many people killed and wounded. I believe, okay, I've taken up Eve's time. Are you there, Eve?
How's it going, sir?
Not bad. I was talking about the Gaza matter. I'm sure that's on your mind, too. But I have to ask you now, because today is we're getting the result of the election in Venezuela. And the part that I guess concerns me most is what I saw on the subways as I came to do the show. They are announcing to the Canadian public that the government of Canada, as a member of something called the Lima Group, is rejecting the results of the democratic process in Venezuela. I bet you're not surprised, but maybe you could tell us, what the heck is the Lima Group?
Yeah, well, the Lima Group's a group of mostly right-wing South American governments and Canada that basically were trying to censure the Venezuelan government through the Organization of American States, and were unsuccessful in convincing a majority of OAS members to get on board with their anti-Venezuelan government position.
So that's a faction? It's a faction within the OAS?
Well, it's just I mean, it's members that basically just created this on the side. There's no, you know, sort of official, they've just sort of created this group on the side. That its first meeting was in Lima, so they dubbed themselves the Lima Group, and they held a meeting in Toronto about 6-8 months ago, and they've been, you know, right at the front. When you look at Chrystia Freeland, Canadian Foreign Minister, when she announces her criticisms of the Venezuela electoral process, she always does it with the sort of cover of the Lima Group, but it's a whole big groundswell of opposition to the Venezuelan government in Latin America. That's how our government tries to portray it, and I think the other Lima Group members try to do something similar. But in fact, when you look a little closer, you find that many governments have already congratulated Venezuela. You know, China, Russia, Bolivia, Cuba, many other countries are not buying into this this idea that that there was a problem with the with the electoral results, but our foreign minister is right at the forefront of attacks, and announced that you know the Canadian won't be setting up won't be restarting diplomatic relations with Venezuela because won't be sending a new ambassador because of the recent election. But this is a very embarrassing blow. The election results are a very embarrassing blow to Canada's position vis-a-vis Venezuela, that's for sure.
By the way, isn't this an illustration of how autocratic we're becoming and authoritarian? Because there are international bodies, are there not, that do look into elections? Jimmy Carter is rather famous for his traveling the world and determining the quality of elections. And my memory is that President Maduro specifically asked the United Nations to make sure that they would be observers.
And the U.S. government, probably Canada as well, put pressure on the U.N. to not send observers. And of course, that was one of Canada's conditions to make the election credible, was that there be international observers, but then they quietly do everything they can to block those international observers. One of the other conditions was that the election get postponed, so the opposition has more time to organize itself. The election was postponed. That didn't change Canada's position.
They actually gave way on their end. Venezuela heard people like Chrystia Freeland and others say, "Oh, you're doing this too quickly," so they agreed to postpone it. Right?
Yeah. Well, and even initially, initially the position of the Lima group was we have to have elections right away. Then the Venezuelan government, in agreement with the opposition, said, "Okay, we'll have elections right away." Then they said it's too quick. They decided, "Okay, well, we'll postpone it for a month." And it doesn't matter. The conditions are regime change. That is the objective here. And anything short of that is not going to be enough for Chrystia Freeland. And the Canadian government made that clear. The sanctions, two different phases of sanctions against Venezuela. Those sanctions have been condemned by the UN Human Rights Council explicitly, obviously contravention of international law, contravention of the OAS Charter. Just if you take a look at Canadian diplomatic affairs, which I follow fairly closely, it's just endless, the efforts that Chrystia Freeland is putting into criticizing the Venezuelan government. In meetings with Jamaica, one of the three items that they discuss is Venezuela. In meetings with Costa Rican officials, Canadian government is putting pressure on governments, particularly in the Caribbean, who have not bought into this U.S.-led campaign. Canada's putting pressure on them to join the Lima group, to endorse the statements of the Lima group, to go after the Venezuelan government. And tweet after tweet, press release after press release, criticizing the Venezuelan government. All of it, again, it's reported lack of a democracy, but then you have Brazil, where you have a president that came to power in a soft coup. Then you have Honduras, where it's a totally dubious electoral process, extending term limits that was contrary to the Honduran constitution. Yeah. So
in Brazil, you have something that couldn't be clearer, right? You, Mr. Lula. Very, very popular. Nobody disputes it. Very popular individual, and his party is popular. So they arrested him on charges of corruption, etc. He's locked up, and he hasn't got a prayer. They removed the president under similar dubious talk about corruption. And as you pointed out, I think Mr. Temer, who is the president, hasn't been elected to anything. But the corruption charges against him would put the other two in the shade. And yet Canada has no problem.
Yeah, and the justification for opposing Maduro to attend the Summit of the Americas last month that Canada joined in on trying to block, which ended up succeeding, was that there was an electoral problem. But, Honduran leader is there, the Brazilian leader is there. So it's nothing to do with electoral problem. The problem is very clear. The Canadian government is not happy with the progressive transformation that Venezuela has led for basically two decades now. And there's a number of important Canadian corporations, companies like Barrick Gold, that are not happy with the more nationalistic economic policies that that Venezuela has pursued over the past couple of decades. And that's not, of course, saying that there's not any problems in Venezuela. There are obvious problems. There are obviously, you know, limitations. There's obviously you know, serious issues. But that's not what the Canadian government is concerned about. The Canadian government is concerned about the transformation in a way that weakens Washington, Ottawa, and corporate Canada's grip over the country and the region more generally.
Yeah. You wrote a very good article in Venezuela Analysis. I hope people go to that. It's I'm looking for the date here, but quite recently, April. And that site has been pointing out that the media in Venezuela is largely, particularly the most prominent papers, are against President Maduro. And they make it as though there is no free press.
I mean, you just hear comment after comment by Venezuelan opposition political leaders that are, you know, refer to the totalitarian regime, basically call for coups. They're allowed to openly say this stuff. They don't. It's in very rare occasions. It's only when they're completely, it's totally proven that they were involved in a coup that they end up spending any time in jail. But yet we hear over and over again about the lack of freedom of speech and freedom of the press in Venezuela. And you just have to take a little look at Venezuelan newspapers, and you'll find very quickly that that they're significantly more oppositional than the newspapers we have in this country.
More variety. More variety of opinion.
More variety of opinion, but that's, you know, that's part of the problem from the perspective of the Canadian and U.S. governments. They don't the Chavez-led Bolivarian Revolution led to more political options being put on the table, and there's some of those political options that our leaders are not too excited about.
Yeah, we're speaking to Eve Engler. His article is in VenezuelaAnalysis.com, and people should know. A candidate named Falcón, he offered up a platform, which he published, by the way, in the New York Times. People want to read it. He clearly argued for, I think he wanted dollarization. He wanted a U.S. dollar to help the economy. He wants to work for the International Monetary Fund. It's a program. It's his position. He's the candidate. He lost.
Yeah, and it's no surprise that the population is not excited by the opposition when the opposition, many elements of the opposition are calling for more sanctions. They're calling for coups. They're calling for foreign intervention. I mean, why would, you know, even somebody who's not totally excited by Maduro and somebody who's had, fallen victim to some of the recent economic downturn, you know, it's a pretty big step to throw your lot in with a group of people who are, you know, wanting dollarization, for instance. And Falcón represents the better end of the opposition in terms of the extremeness. So it's really not a surprise that not much of the population is you know, jumping behind these political factors, which of course is part of why Canada, you know, worked so hard to discredit the elections, is because they knew that the all likelihood it was going to be the result that they didn't want to see. And so if you know that's what's the likely result, then you're better off trying to discredit than you know, engage in something that your people are gonna lose.
Mm-hmm. Your article also points out Canadian officials have been active in trying to change the regime. They don't use that word, but they've been making sure that technical and financial assistance reached, I guess, what we would call NGOs, so that, as one of the, I think you quoted an ambassador as saying, encouraging Venezuelans to speak out. That would be, he means speak out against the government of Maduro. And he says, we've provided him, again, your quotes, an internet presence. I mean, that is serious intervention, meddling in the internal affairs of Venezuela.
you know, what one of the things that's unbelievable, is what you're referring to is a quote from Ben Roswell, who was Canada, who's a considered a star in the global affairs Canada world. And he, just as he was stepping down as ambassador last August, in an interview to the Ottawa Citizen, he said, and I quote, "We established quite a significant internet presence inside Venezuela so that we could then engage tens of thousands of Venezuelan citizens in a conversation on human rights. We became one of the most vocal embassies in speaking out on human rights issues and encouraging Venezuelans to speak out." And so he's basically saying openly that we're working to destabilize the government.
It's also, but it's a bribe, right? If you are you willing to speak out against Maduro? Here's some dough, right?
For sure. No, and that if you start looking more closely into the funding, and I've only really just touched on it, and it's something that a whole PhD probably could be written on. When you start looking at the groups, they're funding, right? So yeah. Canada gives this human rights prize. They have this annual human rights prize the embassy gives out. I do, you know, quick search on the individuals they gave this to the just recently in March. And, of course, these are, you know, hard oppositional voices that, you know, denounce all the human rights violations of the Venezuelan government, and it's a, you know, it's a police state kind of language. You look, and this goes back. This didn't start under Chrystia Freeland. This goes back at least 15 years. People like Anthony Fenton. There's a one Neil Berman who looked at it. There's money being put in into the certainly in the hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Some years maybe it's into the millions of basically funding oppositional groups. Sometimes they state quite explicitly that this is about sort of anti kind of government perspectives. Obviously, the ambassador's comment is one example of that. Group like, you go back a number of years now, Sumate, headed by one of the players in the 2002 coup against. Chavez.
Someone who participated in an illegal coup against
illegal
the
Democrats.
We give him a human rights prize.
Exactly. And given human rights, give a donation of $22,000 back in, I think, 2004, brought to Ottawa to meet after meeting with the American government after the Bush administration, then was brought to Ottawa to meet with Canadian officials, the head of this group, Sumate. Big, important right-wing political voice within Venezuela. That's where Canadian aid money is going to. This is, and it's not just a Venezuela thing. The starkest example I know of is in the case of Haiti in the early 2000s, where we spent huge amounts of money trying to build up a civil society opposition to the elected government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. So that's what, you know, the Canadian government has been doing in Venezuela. And just two or three days ago, Chrystia Freeland announced $5.3 million in aid to Venezuela, which was about dealing with the refugee crisis, was how it was framed. I haven't looked in detail into that money, but I would almost guarantee you that, you know, maybe some of that money goes to what most people would consider sort of humanitarian endeavors, but a chunk of that money is going to be going to into oppositional voices, and it's very very difficult to track all of this, but it is something that, you know, deserves to be tracked. But the big picture is that we are interfering in Venezuelan affairs. If the Russian ambassador or any other country's ambassador would have said what Ben Roswell, our ambassador to Venezuela, said when he, you know, in August, they would have said that about Canadian affairs. There would have been a hue and cry about efforts to intervene in domestic affairs.
Yeah. Now, the meat of this, of your article, and very, very appropriate, you begin with a very good question. We have a Social Democratic Party, that's how it describes itself, the New Democratic Party, federal, in Parliament, and not a one of them wants to investigate any of this, condemns any of this meddling. And no one adds any comments about the threats of the President of the United States to use military force. How come the NDP is so quiet?
Well, that is an interesting
question. Actually, I shouldn't say quiet. Why are they so noisy on the wrong side?
Yeah, no, if you go back into the mid-2000s, in fact, the and even into later into like the 2010 kind of range, then if he did actually have a much better position that was took a critical, not you know, not me as far as I would have you know liked, but took a sort of critical position towards efforts to undermine the Venezuelan government. But I think that that changed very clearly with the rise of Hélène Lavalliere, who is the foreign affairs critic for the NDP now. It's not just her. I think it's a broader, Tom Mulcair and more right-wing shift. But Hélène Lavalliere, the NDP foreign critic, has gone to the to like real extents, to the extent that really actually, as somebody who's very critical of NDP foreign policy, was taken aback by, to the point where a year or so ago, she referred to the vice president of Venezuela as being a drug dealer that had billions. She actually used the word billions of dollars. Just like over the top accusations that even the Golden Mail wouldn't feel. They're just okay. Yeah, that's a little much.
She found that information in her rectum, I assume.
Yeah, who knows where she found that information? But she was willing to believe the most sort of outlandish, hard right voices within Venezuela, and that really took me by surprise. But there's just example after example where even at one case he actually criticized the Harper government for not being more critical of the Venezuelan government. And so she's on record. At least I got her in one article I wrote back in February. Five different times, putting out press releases, putting out statements that are basically pushing the government into more aggressive position against Venezuela. I think that Lavalliere has now held back on that because at the recent NDP convention, the Socialist Caucus put forward a resolution, which is apparently the first time this has ever happened, where they actually called for her to be taken out as foreign critic in large part for her role in trying to bring regime change in Venezuela. So I think she's kind of pulled back. She got the backlash over the past couple of months to how far she went, I think, has probably softened her position. But beyond these statements she's put out, calling for more aggressive Canadian posture, she's just stayed completely silent to Canada's meddling, stayed completely silent to, all the criticisms that Chrystia Freeland, the sanctions, mm-hmm. stay silent in the face of threats of invasion by Donald Trump, etc.
Yeah. Another matter related to that is that they don't challenge arbitrary and discretionary use of power by the minister and the government. Venezuelans in Toronto were prevented from voting by the Canadian government. I saw a picture of a demonstration of them in front of the council. The Venezuelan government was not allowed to have balloting at their embassy.
This is all being done under the name of democracy, of course.
Absolutely. Listen, we go to great lengths. We'd take that ballot box home, by golly, and lock it up.
If you say we don't love democracy,
we'd take your vote away.
No, I mean it's extreme lengths. To be honest with you, again, this is somebody who's followed critically of Canadian foreign policy for a long time. The lengths to which Chrystia Freeland has been willing to go in this mm-hmm. campaign against the Venezuelan government is extreme. And I guess she understands, of course, that the NDP is not challenging her, so she's just feeling
absolutely.
She's not feeling some sort of criticism from the left, or you're not feeling some level of restraint. The media, it's very rare. I mean, Linda McQuaig had the only piece I've ever seen in recent years on the issue. Linda McQuaig had a piece in the Toronto Star, which of course Linda McQuaig then received endless backlash for because it's considered so out of bounds of the official discussion. But unless there's forces that are holding Chrystia Freeland to account, she's just going to continue with.
And they could actually build something the way Corbyn has. Corbyn, at least in his, he's a Labour Party man. He says things like, "I'd like to see a report. I demand an investigation." These people, they're all for going the other direction. Isn't the net result of the Lima Group and Trump's language and Freeland's posture, putting them all together, a road to violence? they really won't be happy unless there's a coup, right?
I mean, they don't seem to have any other option at this point. I mean, they've gone so far down this path of the regime is illegitimate. You know, any effort at elections are illegitimate. So this election is illegitimate. They're going to say the next election. You know, all the elections are illegitimate. So they're, you know, pushing down that path. Now, of course, we have to understand a big part of why this is. They've ramped up this campaign that, you know, has been lower level for the past two decades. And obviously, when they ousted Chavez in 2002, that was at a higher level, and just after that, but then it kind of dampened down, was because they smell some blood. They had smelled some blood. That was what was going on. That's the campaign's ramped up in the past couple of years, partly because governments in the region have gone more right wing. Of course, after Rousseff was ousted in Brazil, that, you know, put Brazil into a camp, and you know, Argentina. So there's you know, regional dynamics. Some of those dynamics may change if you have different elections in Mexico. You have, well, we'll see what's happening with Brazil. So some of those dynamics, and then there's also the internal economic problems in Venezuela. But those, with the price of oil going up, that there's a good chance that those problems will lessen. So from the they've taken a kind of all-in position. You know, will the Americans decide to go to war with Syria, Yemen, Korea, Venezuela, and however many other countries all at the same time? Maybe, you know, they probably aren't going to go that far, but they certainly might. And there's a lot of people speculate that they might try an invasion from Colombia and, you know, things like that. But the election results, clearly the numbers, both in terms of how much support Maduro got, but also in terms of the fact that voting turnout was not as high as previous elections, but the abstention was clearly not very significant. So that's a big blow to Canadian-U.S. policy in Venezuela.
Well, Eve Engler, it's a great article in VenezuelanAnalysis.com, and we really appreciate your books, Canada in Africa, The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. We're everybody got to refer to that right now in light of the developments. Eve, thanks very, very much.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Okay, doke. Bye-bye. Yeah. This is CIUT, this Taylor Report, CI 89.5 FM. We will take a brief break, come back, and we will be talking to Rick Sterling about developments in Syria.